And welcome back to our Independence Night program. This hour, two more guests who's behind the secret door. And then we'll have open lines for the next couple hours here on Coast to Coast AM. So when we come back, I'll open the door and let's see who it is. Okay, welcome back. Who's behind the secret door? Let's open the door. sounds like Halloween you guys picked out all of a sudden. So hello there, Mr. Guest, Mrs. Guest, whoever you are. Holy Toledo. Sounds like Billy Mumy in Lost in Space.
Oh, thanks a lot.
I know who... wait a minute. I know who this is. Not from that first thing, but from the second one. Are you a remote viewer?
Yeah. And like I say, in my world, there's no secrets.
Major Dames. I knew it was you because you've trained me how to remote view, and I knew it was you. I could see you.
I could train you more if you come to the workshop next month. But anyway, happy 4th, George. I think you and I feel very a good sense of gratitude for having been born and raised in this country.
It's a great country. And, you know, it's got its issues. It's got its problems, as everyone does.
Yeah, it does.
So tell me, what's new with the main... Where are you, by the way? Are you here or are you back in Ukraine?
I just returned from Ukraine, moving my family out of the combat zone. Very sad situation.
You did get them out of there, though. That's good.
Yeah, I got them out of there. We dodged a few bullets and shrapnel and stuff, but we did it.
Are things calming down there at all?
No, sir.
Nothing.
No, it's just a tragedy, and it's going to get worse. But I really didn't want to talk about that tonight.
No. Let's talk about something a little more upbeat.
Yeah.
Tragic. Hey, I just came back from the International Remote Viewing Association conference in Vegas. I held a little panel there and spoke, had a great time there. Then a lot of folks love you out there.
The founder was one of my students, one of my professional development.
Really?
Students. And because he took the course, that's why he funded and started the IRVA.
We talked about, Russell Targ was on there, and, he's up there in age, but we just had a great time talking about consciousness and free will and free choice and remote viewing. And we got into a heck of a discussion, Ed, over if you see the future with remote viewing, can you change it or are you stuck with it? And we had a great time talking about that. What do you think of that, the ability to change the future, alter it after you've seen it?
After 30 years of practice, George, I still don't know the answer to that question.
Really?
Yeah. I still don't know.
It's a difficult question.
Except for what we do empirically, the very, very large events, the kind of things that I've talked about on your show, the very large events, they do not seem to be preventable. They seem to be a fait accompli. They're done. They exist in time. But as individuals, and I've said this before, as individuals, we can possibly choose to engage or participate in them or not. But the events themselves, if we can remote view them, just like the prophets of old, we're not prophets, of course, but they could perceive things 2,000 plus years hence. These things are so big, they loom so large in time that they're there. They exist already, and they're unavoidable as far as we're concerned. Now, I have a personal philosophy, but it's just personal, and I don't know, I have no basis in truth. But I'm a firm believer in the power of prayer, what we call prayer, humans too. And I think that with a certain threshold, I think that the creative force in the universe can do anything it wants, anything in time and space. But I think that a certain threshold, it might be possible to avoid tragedies and these kinds of things. But I don't think on our planet at this time we're there.
When you were last with me, we talked about the Malaysia Jet 370, and now they're beginning to think it's in the Indian Ocean, as you predicted, back in April. But I don't know if they'll ever find that plane or not.
I think it's too deep to really, and of course the transponders, the battery's gone. But I stand by it. It's not a prediction. It's just a regular remote viewing work, geofix work. And it's to the west of Myanmar in the drink. Co-pilot tried to save the aircraft, but the pilot had an agenda. And
the pilot won.
Well, nobody won. I mean, the decompression and everybody was gone, and down in the drink it went.
Do you think the pilot wanted to hijack the plane?
Yes, sir, absolutely. Yeah. He wanted to take it to Somalia or someplace like
that.
Yeah. He had practiced that at home in his Link trainer.
Interesting take. There's some people that think it may be on land, but...
No, sir. It's not on land. It's not on
there. Hey, so tell me about your upcoming conference. Is it going to be in Reno or Tahoe? Where's it going to be?
It's not a conference, George. It's a basic workshop, but the focus is on sanctuaries.
It's a study course, right?
No, sir. It's a basic remote, the fundamentals of remote viewing, but the day and the after hours are focused on people, individuals finding their sanctuaries, kill shot sanctuaries, and also Fukushima. The West Coast has a problem from Fukushima, and the sanctuary areas where people need to go to get away from that problem are what we talk about there. And you know what? That's almost sold out. But there's always a seat for you. I'll leave one open.
I've been telling you this for years. But everyone, I'm either in St. Louis or at some other event speaking.
I have a little plaque on one chair that says George. If you show up,
it's mine. It's mine. Mm-hmm. And learnrv.com, you've got the dates there and everything on the website?
Yeah. And I don't want to talk about gloom and doom stuff tonight, all the stuff that
But that's what doing. That's what you're known for. Doom is your name.
It's kind of a special day, and I came through a secret door, so I'm supposed to be somebody else.
All right, so let's talk about the future. Give me the upbeat stuff for the future. Can you?
The only upbeat thing, I mean, for the near term future, we're talking martial law, and that's very sad.
Oh, that's comforting.
Yeah, it's not comforting, but in my world, no secrets. The most upbeat thing for me at the global level is ET contact. I feel that extraterrestrial contact is imperative. I really believe that the only way to save this race, this current race of ours on this planet, is extraterrestrial contact. And if that's not there in terms of their intervention, this race is finished, and the planet will have to go into hibernation for a while in order to resurrect itself.
Are you saying contact is there and we're going to know about it, or it's coming?
No, I'm saying it's there, and what I have been saying and I'm saying now is that it can be evoked. It can be facilitated, but you have to have the right keys, the consciousness tools, know where to go and know what to do in order to open that door. They're always here. They're always watching. They always have been. But we have to invite them. We have to actually say, well, give the keys of the car back to Dad and say, I'm not mature enough to drive this car. We have to man up to that as a race and say, please help. And that's what I've been working on and I'm very optimistic about. But consciousness tools are important. These so-called remote viewing tools, they are the future. And that's what the lingua franca is out there in the galaxies, because there's so many different types of life forms. But they have one thing in common, and that's consciousness. So communication via consciousness tools really is the lingua franca, the universal language.
Are there people who practice remote viewing, Ed, and they don't even know they're doing it?
Oh, no. No, those would be psychics and visionaries.
Okay.
And savants and seers. Remote viewing takes advantage of that innate ability, and most you and I, of course, would agree that it's an innate ability. We turn that into a skill, period. We turn it into a very, very rigorous skill.
Sure.
Just like the ability to speak a language, we all possess that as youngsters and toddlers. We possess the ability, but unless we have a structure, someone introduces us to a syntax and grammar, whether it be Spanish, Chinese, or English, we don't have that structure. And what Ingo Swann and what Harold Puthoff developed in the laboratory was the structure for how to take this innate psychic ability that we have and turn it into a very systematic skill. Of course, it was used for intelligence purposes. We needed to be able to solve a technical scientific problem in as short a period of time as possible, so we adapted this innate ability into a structure to be able to do that, and that's what I teach now.
I still can't believe the government abolished that program. Something tells me they've got a secret one, but I mean, they would have still used you folks. You guys were the best.
Yeah, they're gonna readopt it, George. They haven't, because it was such a hot potato. But now, in these days and times, and because of exigencies at the moment,
they need it.
Believe me, they need us again. So it's gonna happen.
Are the Russians doing it still?
You know what? I don't know. On the next, I'll probably go to St. Petersburg next month, and then I'll ask, because the head of the KGB, our counterpart to the KGB team, Ivan Sokolov, after the Cold War was over, I met my counterpart, the operations officer of the KGB team, and he wanted me to help him form a company, because the Sovs, the Soviets, kicked them out, too. They didn't want anything to do with the spooky stuff.
Who went first? The Soviets kick out their group, or did we? Good question.
Yeah, it's probably about the same time. They just
so we didn't react to the Soviet situation.
Oh yes, huh? We reacted to the 10-foot-tall syndrome. That was the old saying: the Soviets are 10-foot-tall. When we found out that the KGB was doing this and that the Czechs were involved in a psychoenergetics problem, I don't want to go into all the technicalities, but then, yes, that's why we formed this nascent Psy spy unit funded over the years at
the Soviets.
$20 million.
So I'm wondering if we found out they disbanded theirs, then they disbanded ours.
No, it was both. It was pretty coincidental. The people that were in charge, the officiators, became afraid that the knowledge that they were involved in the occult and these kinds of things would damage their careers.
What about the Chinese, Ed? What are they doing? They've got to be dabbling in this.
Oh, we're still ahead of them. At least my agency, Matrix Intelligence, is still ahead of them in terms of remote viewing. But our sister science, telekinesis, psychokinesis, they are way, way ahead of us by leaps and bounds. Leaps and bounds.
In fact,
what that means is that they will be in a position to actually affect, using the minds of a group of children, guidance systems on missiles, software, the hardware in U.S. computers, those kinds of things.
That's powerful.
Yeah, very, very.
Gosh.
Yeah, but humans are incredible, Drew. We are amazing. Human potential is amazing. We grew up in this paradigm saying that all these things are impossible. The Chinese saying, I speak Chinese. There's Chinese saying that that people that believe that what somebody is doing is impossible should not, disturb them. That really is the kind of paradigm we grew up in. We believe we're accustomed. We're boxed in by our languages and our cultural conditioning to think certain things. But humans are so much more powerful and have so much more potential than that.
Oh, they sure do. I've been talking to you now, Ed, for 12 years. This is the most upbeat you have sounded about things.
Upbeat?
You do.
Oh, I got.
Are you holding back?
Dr. Doom can't. I'll ruin my reputation.
You're holding back, aren't you?
No.
You do. You sound upbeat for a change. You don't seem.
Well, I love my work, and it's nice to talk to you on this 4th of July, so I should be upbeat.
You've always been a great supporter of this program, Ed.
Oh, well, vice versa. You've been a great supporter of me, George.
Well, I like what you do, and I like who you are. And, you're a no-nonsense guy. I mean, the first time I met you, we were doing a TV show for Sci-Fi. And, I mean, you're just a straight shooter, and I applaud you for that.
Oh, thank you. Those are nice compliments. I appreciate it.
So, want to give me a lottery number or something like that?
Yeah, well, I can give you some nice, I can give you some neat things. No, really.
Well, I mean, your conference is it,
George.
Your workshop is where, in Reno or Tahoe?
Yeah, it's in Reno. This one's not closed doors. Many of them have been, but this is just a workshop that stresses how close we are and sense of urgency.
So, I mean, like after the workshop's done, you and I could walk into a casino, Ed. And,
Yep. Yeah, I teach my students how to win at the roulette table.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do because it's fun. It's a fun thing. Remote viewing, it's not just an adventure. It's not just a powerful mind tool. But I make it fun, too, and that's a fun thing.
I have on my trips to Vegas, I have looked at a roulette table. I don't play it that much. But I have picked numbers, or I've tried to. And now here's a great question. Am I trying to see the number that it's going to drop on?
No.
Or am I trying to move the machine to make the number appear?
No. It's strictly remote viewing. You're trying to look forward in time. And the way to do that is to use simply your mind-body connection. Your unconscious knows everything about the future. And your body has a direct link to your unconscious. So what you have to do is remove your thinking mind, that lower mind that knows everything, that knows that analytical mind. You have to remove it from the equation. I teach the students how to do that. So in 3 minutes, you using your mind-body connection, you know what number is going to pop up. Now, that system saturates. You can only win the roulette table at roulette about two times in 15 minutes. Then you have to back off because your body saturates in terms of...
That's the secret.
Kinesiology, and I show the students that in short order. It takes about 5 minutes to show them how to do that.
That's fun. That's the fun part about doing this.
Yeah, and it is fun. Yeah.
And it is such, I've gotten emails from people who've been through your workshops, and I mean, it has changed their life.
Changed my remote viewing changed my life. And once you learn it, you cannot look at the world the same way anymore because you know that potentially you can know anything, and that's a big change. Because then it becomes a matter of, gee, life is short, it's finite, but and I can't. There's no time to learn everything. So what are the real questions? What are the really real questions I want to know in the short, finite life on Earth before we leave this mortal coil?
Were you always psychically and intuitively inclined as a kid?
Oh, no. No, George. No, I was about as psychic as a rock. No, zero. I mean, and now that I understand after 30 years in this business, I understand that my innate ability, my natural innate ability, my birthright, I was pretty much below average in terms of psychic ability as opposed to many thousands of my students that I've taught who... Many of them are way, way over. But no, I had to work to be good. I had to work at what I loved to be good.
But you enjoyed this. And,
oh, I loved
and
it.
It's changed
I loved
your
it
life.
More than my mentor. My mentor, Ingo Swann, to whom I became protege, he did not love it. He loved astrology a lot.
And yeah, and
right back
stuff.
To that after yeah. he taught this prototype team of which I was a member. But I loved this so much. That's why I became his protege.
And you never stopped.
I never. I'm still in awe. Every day I do this. I'm in awe of this technology, this mind technology.
It's powerful, Ed. It really is.
Yeah, yeah, it is. But it's also wonderful, and it's a wonderful adventure as well. It has no limits in terms of its potential, and I think it's critical in terms of human evolution en masse.
Can you tell if someone's a remote viewer just by meeting them?
No, sir.
Okay, so there's no...
I have to talk with them and listen to them and look in their eyes, look in their heart, and see if there's a congruence, and it would take me about 10 minutes to be able to ascertain that.
And what did you use to make that strange little voice at the top?
Oh, I have an old thing. It must be 30 years old, a little device thing here that I used, you know. It has nothing to do with...
I love it. Ed, we're at the time limit. Thanks again. Major Ed Dames, website learnrv.com. We will have one more secret door guest when we come back. And we'll start with open lines next hour for the next couple hours here, this Independence Day program for you. You know the pledge. If a holiday falls on a work day, we will be live. I will be live. And if for some reason it falls on a weekend where we have one of our guest hosts, somebody, if it's not me, will be there. Speaking of me, I'll be on the air here Sunday for you. And we'll have emerging artists and a couple special guests, including Nick Baggage, who will be talking to us about why they have decided now to keep Harp going. They were going to shut it down. So they're going to have that going. And we'll talk more. I'll give you an update next hour about Stanton Friedman. You know, Stan, our great friend, father of modern day ufologists, he had a heart attack last week. So I'll give you an update on his condition next hour as well. So let's open up our final secret door. And invite them in. Hello there.
Hello.
How are you?
It's just such an annoying thing. I'm so excited. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say.
Are you into ufology?
Yes, I am, actually.
Are you a writer?
It's true. I am a writer.
Are you?
No longer.
Are you Lee Spiegel?
Who's he?
Lee writes for the Huffington Post.
Ah, the Huffington Post.
Let me go. Okay. Let's see. Okay. When were you last on with me?
Maybe a month or more.
A month. Okay, that's pretty recent.
I'll give you a little hint.
All right.
Okay, hold on one second.
There goes a little hint. Oh, that's right. You're the saxophonist.
So darling,
yeah, that's right. You worked with Benny King.
This is true.
Anthony Carr.
Incredible grasp of the obvious.
Anthony Carr.
How are you doing?
That is fantastic. And by the way, your sax playing is magnificent.
Well, that's only because I played three notes. Any more than that, and you may change your opinion. So I'll quit while I'm ahead.
my granddaughter, who just turned 20 when she was in high school, played the saxophone. And I kept telling her, Ari, keep doing it. You're gonna trust me later in life. And she said, No, Papa, I've done it for 2 years. I'm done. And off
well,
she went.
The old high school. Although I was a late bloomer, I mean, we were so poor that I never even saw a musical instrument up close until I happened to pass a pawn shop downtown Toronto when I could afford the streetcar fare.
Tom is sending me your bio right now.
I took my first lesson November 22nd, 1963, if that rings a bell.
Yeah, it sure does. What an ominous day that was.
Yes,
oh, my
yes.
God. Tom is sending me your bio so I can get some info on your website and stuff. And the book, Stargazer, Predictions and Prophecies. How'd we do after you were on the show with us?
I got, believe it or not, close to 50,000 hits.
Wow.
Unfortunately, I had nothing to sell.
No.
As you know, I don't have a computer. I have a young fellow who runs all that stuff for me, Justin DeSilva. I think I mentioned his name to you before.
Right.
And I just finished the gig, which is why I just happened to have the horn with me. And can I do a little advertising before we get into this?
Yeah. And by the way, it was.
Are you coming to Toronto? You said you're coming, and I'm going to take you out and wine and dine you and see my band and play songs for you.
I don't know
if
I'll have time for that, but you're coming to see me. I'll be there November 8th. I'm letting everybody know that now that they just settled on that. Yep.
Great. What's the
I'll be at the Queen Elizabeth Theater.
Oh, great. Oh, wonderful. Beautiful place. Beautiful.
Doing
theater.
My event. But, you know, Anthony, call Tom because he's producing that show.
Right.
And, you know, I've told him, hey, let's get some guests that are geographical so, you know, they're not flying all over the country. Give him a call. Maybe he can get you on. I'd love for you to come on and play the saxophone for a little bit.
Well, okay, I'll do that. If could I possibly just, it wouldn't cost you guys anything. I'll bring my three guys up and do a couple of tunes or one or two. Or I will play by myself. But
if you work that out with Tom, you do whatever you want.
Well, I'll get a hold. How do I get a hold of Tom?
Okay. I'm going to put you on hold after we're done, and he'll talk to you. And you got, he's got your numbers, but you can get his.
Lots of people have my number. Let me tell you.
They have your number. Anyways, what?
So tomorrow, July 5th, I'm playing at our favorite place in just the east of Toronto, Pickering, called the Harp and Crown. And we'll be doing the R&B thing there and all that. It's one of my regular places. But more importantly, is closer to your date, but not that close. July 27th, we'll be at the world famous, the fabulous Chicken Deli in Toronto, which is now called Club. It's called 744. But this is one of these joints. It's the mecca of jazz, blues, R&B, you name it.
I love Toronto.
Everybody from royalty to rounders, they frequent this joint, let me tell you.
I love it.
Anybody you've ever known in your life, if you sit there long enough, 40 years later, 20 people you knew years ago, you'll meet them right there.
By the way, is it possible, what is one of your favorite tunes that you think you play well? That everybody would know?
Oh, good. Well, you know, I started off... practically in vaudeville, you know, we used to play music for the dancers, and the two tunes we played all the time were Night Train and Harlem Nocturne.
Well, I'm going to have you play for the last minute you're on with me, and then we'll just fade you out.
They but
so
out?
So get it ready. Anthony, I wanted to ask you, because we didn't have enough time to really dwell on it when you were with me a few months ago.
Right.
Your father taught Harry Houdini how to dive in deep water to get him ready for that Detroit event, didn't he?
Yeah, he met him in 1922 at the, I guess it's the New York Pier, Coney Island. Is that right?
Yeah.
He taught him. He was on the same. He was only about 18 or 20. Harry was already, you know, reaching toward the end of his lifespan, and my dad taught. You know, nobody knows, or at least they're not too familiar with the fact that here we go again with his real name, Weiss. What was his first name? Can't remember. I'm at that age where I'm having senior moments a lot, but anyway, he taught him how to hold his breath and do some of the deep water dives and how to dive in 6 feet of water from 100 feet without injuring himself. And Houdini was a very, very excellent high diver. Not too many people know that.
Eric was his first name, by the way. Eric.
Sorry?
Eric Weiss.
Weiss, that was it. And he gave him this semi-precious ruby ring, which I still have to this day, which, of course, I sent you at one time. And I also have, as you remember, I have the last official Harry Houdini seance, which was held in 1936 at the Knickerbocker Hotel in Los Angeles. And it was a hookup around the world, of course. And then Bess finally at the end said, "I don't believe Harry is coming back."
Yeah,
and I reverently turned off the candle. Good night, Harry, wherever you are.
He was obsessed.
But of course, he kept going.
He was obsessed with trying to find the right medium so he could get a hold of his mother.
And out of that was born, of course, the ilk of CCOP, you know, the Committee for Claim, was it CCOP, the Committee for Investigation and Claims of the Paranormal, and of course, what's his name, who was always on television quite a bit, I haven't seen him lately, Randy.
The Amazing Randy.
The Amazing Randy, James Randy. Rich, I told you that story, how he's originally from Toronto, and he couldn't get any ink as an escapologist, an escape artist, so he took a page of Houdini's book and started attacking psychics and spiritualists, and by defrauding them, of course, turned a lot of the media attention on himself.
That's right.
And I also told you, he came to me for reading, and I have his palm prints here, years and years ago, before he was awarded that $247,000 by the McCarthy Foundation for Debunking River Pop-Off. And he says, "Am I ever going to make it?" I said, "You know, for a guy who claims he doesn't believe, he says, never mind that BS. You know, he says, give me a read." So I read and so on. And I have his palms on my website. Now, here's a guy, he's made his name, debunking psychics and palmists and everything. And I have his letterhead with his palm prints and everything on my website there.
With him wanting a reading.
And he wanted to read. He wanted to know. And I actually said he would. He's a Leo, and I actually said he would be very famous within the next year and a half. the media, something to do with religion, as I put as close as I could hit on it. And then, of course, sure enough, after that, the Reverend Popoff incident, he never looked back, as they say.
I love it. It's a great story about him.
He forgets. But people who, it's like. Sorry to interrupt, but he reminds me of Kennedy and Joel. Joe Kennedy, when they try to buy respectability and they forget the roots, this is when they run into problems. You should never forget where you come from.
That's right. Well, there's a difference between reputation and character, as you all know.
Well, that's right. And a lot of my students, I said, never confuse talent, whether it's music or writing or psychics, never confuse the talent with the character. I said, there are a lot of talented people who I wouldn't give you 2 cents for as a person of character. See, and a lot of people make that mistake of, he has a voice like an angel, and you think it's a great, and it's not. Quite often they're not. That's not always true, but quite often is the case.
You predicted 9/11, Operation Desert Storm, the killer tsunami that occurred, the situation with Pope John Paul I.
Do you mind if I touch on the missing plane, which you had
asked about? Yeah, exactly. I was just going to ask you about that.
See, well, you're psychic. Or I am, or something, or we
both
are.
That's right, we both are.
Well, I gave this some thought, and I keep seeing a plane down in a jungle. And this jungle could be above water or below water, but they're away. I said right off the bat at my local radio stations here, I said, they are looking entirely in the wrong place. And this was like 2 days after it went missing for a Malaysia Airlines Flight 370, mm-hmm. which disappeared March the 8th, 2014. Not even lukewarm. This search team is more like Antarctic freezing.
Yeah,
in fact, it would probably be a pretty good place to start. But seriously, my mind's eye sees, quote-unquote, a plane sporting a red stripe along its side, resting, not crashed, in deep, lush tropical forest, a forest near or beneath water. The aircraft seems intact as though it landed there and lies parallel with the natural lay of the land, which contains it. The letters B and then S and then A, B-S-A, come to mind, unless outer space Scotty-type aliens have beamed it up, that's where she lies. And if I'm wrong, sue me. But this don't forget, this aircraft is capable of flying nonstop all the way to South America. And I wouldn't be surprised if they found it close to the Amazon or Brazil or somewhere around there.
And do you think it was done on purpose or it was like a crash landing?
As I say, this thing is intact. It's not really destroyed. It's not really, it didn't crash and fall apart and so on. I can only tell you what I see in my mind's eye, the pictures. If you ask me as a human being to interpret even my own visions, a stranger would probably have a better job, looking at a television screen with the sound turned off. It seems to me it was an attempt, to take it somewhere and I don't want to use the word terrorist, but to kidnap it.
But maybe you'll bring it back for some kind of horrible event. That's to be sure. How accurate would you say you are, Anthony, with these predictions?
Well, to be very, very honest, and at my age, I can afford to be honest. You hear of the readers and spirit and psychics say, I'm 100% accurate and I'm 90%. No. When I get these zingers, I'm talking about zingers vis-a-vis 9/11, the murder of Pope John Paul I, the location and the raising of part of the Titanic, these big, the New York, the Statue of Liberty, which not too many Americans know, was sabotaged with a bomb there a few years ago, which I predicted. I would say 10% of my hundreds of, probably thousands of predictions I have to write every year for my various newspapers, periodicals, and, appearances. 90% of it's for entertainment. 10% are real, accurate zingers. So 10% of my 100% of predictions are 100% accurate, if you know that. And the rest, you know, is probably just for entertainment. I have to write that Stargazer column with my partner, Tony Brenna, who's a stringer, I guess, for the tabloids and so on. And he's out of L.A. It's a gossip column, and at the bottom in italics are predictions for the celebrities, you know, psychic predictions, which they haven't been done before. So you can't say something about Tom Cruise 1 week and expect it to come. It's not like a television series, you know.
Right.
Oddly enough, the ones that I think are absolutely ridiculous seem to come to pass more accurately than the ones I take seriously.
I love it. So, look, we've got
no use, and there's no use forcing it. You can't force it. You can't. You have to wait till that electrical spark.
You got to go with the flow. That's right.
Exactly. Electrical flow, my friend.
And once it happens, though, you're in the groove. And there have been many times, I think, Anthony, you know you're in the groove.
That's right. Exactly. And it's when people talk about out-of-body experiences, they're not really out-of-body. That electrical spark, which generates our electrical synapses, you know, or keeps our heart beating, you know, call it the soul, I call it electricity with a capital E, is in sync with the electrical force of outside the body, and it just spreads the way electricity would spread through water. When it hits, you just expand, and you see, if you want to, not with your eyes, you see. And don't forget, blind people have had these experiences where they see, not even know, people have been blind since birth. And you see things they're not even familiar with, because how can they identify a tree? Or how? Yet they'll see something and identify something that looks like a building or a rock or a tree or a bird, which they've never even seen, from the sides of their head and from the rest of the body when they're in sync with that electrical current or with the musical flow. And that's why music is electrically controlled by the universe, too. Truly, music is not only the international language, but certainly the intergalactic language. A few years ago, in one of the newspapers, the wire services said they had received a vibration from a binary star system. I forget how far away it was, but when they translated it on paper and back to Earth, it was, 50 octaves below middle C on the piano.
How about that? Sure. How about that? Hey, grab the saxophone. We've got a minute left. Play us a great tune, and I'll let it take you straight out.
All right, you're going to get it at Tom.
I'm going to have Tom call you, so don't worry about that. Go ahead.
Have him call me. Tell him to use the phone. It's a lot easier.
You got it. Go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Norrie.
You got it.
All right.
Here's his saxophone playing. He played with Benny King and all these other great people. Go ahead. Love it. Love it. Thank you, Anthony. We'll be in touch. Love to see you at the event in Toronto on November 8th. When I come back, it's Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM.